Last month, baritone Lucas Meacham stopped by the WBJC studios to talk about his role as Germont in Verdi's La Traviata with Washington National Opera. So I know you've probably told this story 1,000 times, but tell me a little bit about how you were discovered.
There were several discovery sections in my career up and coming, but probably the biggest one was in a karaoke bar in Paris. It was the first time I'd ever gone to Europe for a contract, and I was singing this new opera, and all of a sudden, they went on strike in Germany. And so instead of being 3 months in Germany with lots of performances, I was 3 months in Germany getting paid with only 3 concert performances, which meant they said, go have a nice month. We'll see you when we open. And so I had a bunch of time. I called some friends that I knew were in Europe. One of my good friends, Paul Groves, a tenor, was in Paris with his friends Susan Graham and Simon Keenlyside and all sorts of like very famous now opera singers who were on the up and up at the time. I show up there and I'm with a bunch of other singers and we're like, well, what do we do? Let's go out and sing some karaoke. In Paris, we go out, we sing karaoke. And of course, like I said, I'm not good at French. I've never been to Paris, but I can sing some karaoke. I actually paid for a lot of my college with karaoke competition winning. So,
do you have a favorite song?
I have a list of about maybe 70 songs that I choose from depending upon the feeling of the karaoke bar. But at the time, my go-to songs were I Believe I Can Fly by R. Kelly and The Piano Man by Billy Joel and Bohemian Rhapsody by Queen. And so I get up and I sang Piano Man in Paris, and fast forward a few months and the baritone who's singing in this role at the Chicago Lyric Opera ends up pulling out because of a bad back, and they say, well, who do we hire for this? And I was just in Paris with Susan Graham and Paul Groves. They were the other two leads in the show, and they said, Lucas would be great for this. Of course, the management there said, have you heard him sing? And they were like, yeah, we've heard him sing. We heard him in Paris and he brought the house down, is what they said.
And so you're singing the role of Germont. Is this a turning point in your career?
It actually is. It's kind of that I'm turning the page. I'm not closing any chapters in my book of Mozart and Rossini and French lyric repertoire, which is what I've really made my name on. But after a certain amount of time in an opera singer's career, there's an evolution that happens. Now I'm moving into more bel canto repertoire and Verdi repertoire like Germont, and honestly, I have to send a thank you shout out to the Washington National Opera for taking a chance on me, because this is the first Verdi role I've done, and they took a chance to hire me to do it, and honestly, I think the public's been very happy, and so have I, with the direction that my voice has gone.
And so how do you approach Germont? He's so pivotal in the opera. I mean, he's the catalyst.
Absolutely.
I mean, nothing changes without him, and everything changes because of him.
Without him, Violetta and Alfredo would be together and happy until she died of tuberculosis, spoiler alert. With any character I play that is considered maybe the villain, I try and understand why this character does it, because nobody is ever bad just to be bad. Nobody just thinks, oh, I can't wait to be evil today, you know, put on their socks one at a time and think, what am I going to ruin the day? And neither does Germont. And if you understand that he's a family man trying to do the best he can for his family, you really start to sympathize with him. And that's the point of view that I take of Germont.
And then he has a change of heart because he knows more.
Honestly, from the first time he meets Violetta in Act Two, he meets her and he's already surprised that she is standing up for herself. She says, you don't speak to me like that in my house, after I rudely greet her. And I say, wow, this woman's got some chutzpah. You know, she's intelligent. It comes out that she is a giving, kind, very nice person. But because I'm there to do a job, I don't care. I see, okay, you're a good person, but you don't need to be with my son. And then I see again in Act Three, when my son disrespects her, I come to her defense and I say, you never talk to a woman the way you just talked to her. And then in Act Four, when I see that she's dying, I realize that I made a mistake. That it, just like in any time, if we take the period of any time, there are social norms and morals that go along with that time period. In his time, you just don't date courtesans, just like right now, if my son dated a stripper, it would probably be sort of on the same, a similar level, not the same, because courtesans were considered classier in the time period that they existed, but it's that sort of thing, you know?
Same sex.
Same sex relationship might be looked down in certain communities. So the social norm doesn't always add up to the morality of a time, you know? It's that sort of thing where I have a revelation and a realization that she was a great person. And that is what made her worthy of my son. Not her position, not her class, but the person that she is. She's a beautiful person. She even says the most moving thing in Act 4. She says, whoever you end up marrying, love them as hard as you can. Just love them as much as you can and treat them well. Always have my memory, but remarry and be happy.
So there's a real arc for him.
Oh, God. Yeah, it kills me on stage every time. It's always very difficult.
Like you say, it's very universal.
Absolutely.
Even if some of the themes are dated, the whole idea of family and caring about your family and changing your mind because of something is universal.
Well, that's what makes opera great, really, is that it taps into human emotion that we can all understand. So we can see a 300-year-old opera and immediately sympathize and understand the characters that are in that opera, even though we don't live at the time of counts before the French Revolution. You know, like we take The Marriage of Figaro, for example. We don't know what it's like to be a count. We don't know what it's like to be a servant, but we can imagine what it's like to get married to someone and have someone else claim the right to your wife on your wedding night. Jealousy, anger, rage, these sorts of emotions, we can understand that because we're all the same species. And as a species, we experience, for the most part, the exact same emotions, no matter where you are in the world, geographically. And so that's why opera is so great, is that it speaks a language that everyone understands, and that's the language of emotion.
So you were Figaro in The Ghosts of Versailles.
Yes.
What is more satisfying, playing a role that has been played so often or doing something that's newer like The Ghosts of Versailles?
I'd have to say they each present unique challenges. In The Ghosts of Versailles, it's a trilogy by Beaumarchais of The Marriage of Figaro. Well, actually, The Barber of Seville happens first, then The Marriage of Figaro, and then The Ghosts of Versailles, or The Mother of Us All is what the translation of that is. And in each one, they have the same characters. So throughout each of these characters develop, and each one is about 10 years after the other. And so in The Ghosts of Versailles, the opera is also in English, it's a modern take on this story. And so it's pretty nice to play this character, but because I've played the other Figaro, I know that this character is now 30 years older. My grandfather is who I think of, actually, when I do this. My grandfather's an amazing man and wonderful and loves me to pieces, but he does have this surliness that sort of has come out with age. And that's what I think of with this character. And vocally, I mean, it was a treat to sing because it fit my voice very well. Mm-hmm. It's a high baritone role, which is right. That's my money notes right there. To win a Grammy for it was pretty awesome. It's pretty cool to have a Grammy sitting on a ledge at home.
That was 2016, right?
Exactly. Yeah, and we went to the ceremony. It was an impressive day, and I gave a speech, and they give you the Grammy and they hand it to you, and you think, yes, my Grammy, this is so cool. And immediately when you leave stage, a gloved person comes and takes it away from you says, we'll mail you one in 6 to 8 weeks.
Oh my gosh, I didn't know.
Seriously,
that.
Yes, yes.
Wow, you're like, no.
Yes, I know. That's how I felt. I'm like, yes, this is so cool. So yeah, they don't give it to you. You get it shipped to you, but you also get it engraved and everything. So it looks nice when you get it.
So what's in the future for you?
Next, we are going to Detroit, actually. It's going to be my debut there to sing The Barber of Seville. And after that, I'll be at the Met for 2 productions. So we'll be in New York for almost 2.5 months singing La Boheme and this incredible Tchaikovsky opera called Iolanta, which I actually toured around. Do you know? Yes, you know
it's
it.
So beautiful.
It's a beautiful piece. Honestly, I'm kind of all Tchaikovsky is pretty incredible to me. It's just a beautiful one-act opera. And I actually toured this with Anna Netrebko, and we have a CD out of this as well.
I found your blog online, and I found it informative and entertaining, but I couldn't help but think that it's a blog for other low voices like yourself, that it's there to help people who want to make singing a career.
Honestly, I kind of paid all the dues that you can pay in the opera world, and I'm happy to do it. I feel like I'm better for it, but there was a lot of tripping and stumbling into good situations that ended up working out, and I thought to myself when I decided to write the baritone blog that I want to help younger singers because I really get a kick out of it. I love doing masterclasses. And through this baritone blog, I thought I'll put out some information and just try and help young singers to just navigate these muddy, murky waters of the opera world, because most people look to the top and see the top artists and say, wow, they just are that. And they don't see the journey that it took for them to be there. And so that's what I try and break it down and say, this is the journey that is ahead of you if you want to do this, and say that you don't just wake up one day as Renee Fleming. You don't wake up as Jonas Kaufman. You bite, scratch, and tooth and nail to sort of gain any sort of footing in the opera world. And then once you have it, there's somebody nipping at your heels that wants that too. And so, and don't get me wrong, honestly, as much as the opera world is fantasized with everyone being divas and devos, everyone at the top is wonderful because we've all worked hard to get there. And we all sort of are just happy to be doing what we do because it's our passion, it's our love, and we just feel lucky to be there. For the most part, every single major artist that I've ever worked with has just been the most kind, amazing, collegial person you could imagine.
The soprano Montserrat Caballé died on October the 6th, and I was wondering how her death affected you and the opera community, if you know.
Well, any time an artistic giant like her is lost, we feel it in the community as a whole. Absolutely. The biggest thing we can do for her is just to continue her legacy of quality, classy singing and just respect for the art form and respect for ourselves as artists, because she was a major artist, but she also had real integrity. I know a few stories about her that are just beautiful, about her either standing up for other artists or for herself. And people like that are rare, because in the arts, in the cultural arts, it can be dog eat dog in the beginning. And for a large artist like her to stand up for young artists as they come up, it's inspiring, really. I had a guy, his name's Ricky Leach, Richard Leach. He used to sing all the major tenor roles at the Met. He is amazing. And he stood up for me once when I was a young artist, and I'll never forget that. But I mean, that's just the tip of the iceberg of what she meant to the opera world and what she gave as an artist.
Thank you so much for doing this, and continued success.
Thank you.
Baritone Lucas Meacham has been my guest. I'm Kati Harrison for WBJC.